Session 2980, Public Talk, Münster, Germany, the 25th of June, 2005.
Well, good evening, friends. Tonight, I thought we'd talk to you a little bit about the science of spiritual life. Most of you, of course, been educated in the world of science, so you understand that science is a field of knowledge, and present-day science, of course, is material knowledge about the physical world, the physical universe. But is there a spiritual science in the true sense, like we have a material science? You know, we have material science, which you do and prove a theory and then disprove it when it was wrong. And also you can repeat it, and others can do it also. So science means that something which you can test out and try. But is there a spiritual science? In the same way that certain basic principles are given to you, certain laws, and then you can try them out and you get the results. Those of you who are in the spiritual field, you know that the history of the planet, the last 6,000 years, there have been a lot of attempts by different religions, the old Jewish religion, the Christian religion, and later the Muslim religion, and before times the ancient Vedic religion of India, and the later Upanishadic religion of India, the science of yoga, Tibetan religion, Buddhist religions, Chinese religion, Japanese religion, and so on. They attempted to create some sort of an understanding about spiritual life. They all had some discoveries or some kind of an understanding. All of these many religions, including early Christianity, wanted to formulate some idea about spiritual life. And of course, the result of that formulating some idea nowadays we call theology. And you know, the Jews have a theology, the Christians have a theology, the Muslims have a theology, the Buddhists, the Hindus, everybody has some theology, which means some sort of a religious doctrinal system whereby they can understand or try to understand reality. But is there actually a science of reality? And this is something different, because you know, if you're brought up in any one of these ancient religions, you might even have an inkling about the theology, what you have learned, some theological ideas. But where is the science? The difference now from the last 6,000 years is that the modern mind does not want theology. Modern mind wants science. Theology is something you believe in. Science is something you can prove to yourself. It's a huge difference. You can have any kind of theology about anything. You can have a theology that God is one or God is three. You know, and in the Muslim religion and in the Jewish religion, God is one. In Christianity, God is three. All of these are theology. And of course, in the Hindu religion, it's also three. And of course, in Buddhism, it's one. One single unity. But in any case, these are theology. But is there a science which you can apply to yourself and find the riddle of life? Because theology is just an idea. But can you have proof of the existence of God, of the existence of soul, of the existence of angelic hierarchies, of the existence of spiritual evolution and so on? Can you have actual proof? This is the difference that for the last 2,000 or 3,000 years, people were very much satisfied with theology. Meaning to say the priestcraft, the church authorities in every religion, gave them some ideas, you know, what God looks like, what heaven looks like, what human beings look like, and that satisfied them. They believed in it, and that was fine. But even in the last 2,000 or 3,000 years, there were people in every great, all the major religions of the world who weren't happy just to believe. They wanted to really find out by practical experience. These we call the mystics. You know, you had Jewish mystics, we had Christian mystics, we had Muslim mystics, the Hindu yogis, the Buddhist yogis, Tibetan yogis, Chinese Taoists, Japanese Zen. They were people who didn't just want a theology, a belief system. They wanted to try something out whereby they can prove whether there is a higher reality or not. Because ultimately, what you believe in doesn't really matter. What you experience does matter. You know, you can believe that God is a triangle or a yellow square. It doesn't make any difference. It's a belief. But what if you actually experience God? Real, direct inner experience. Then it's no longer a doubt in your mind. So even in these ancient religions, and nowadays we call Christianity ancient, it's 2,000 years old, they were people, the mystics, the saints, the holy people, if you like, who weren't happy with just theologies. They wanted to prove whether it was real or not. Okay, so we come to the stage that even in the olden days, the last 3 to 6,000 years, there were people who wanted to know whether God really exists, whether the invisible worlds really exist, whether the soul really exists, and whether the soul is really immortal, or all these are just the ideas of the priestcraft. So they went about trying to meditate, trying to do breathing exercises, trying to do chanting, singing, devotional hymns. They invented all kinds of physical postures, physical exercises. All of the great religions had these physical exercises, breathing techniques, chanting, singing, meditation, contemplation, visualization. They are all part of all the great religions. They all did their own techniques to find out whether in fact you can experience supernatural realities. So you could say that was embryonic. And all of the religions had kind of attempts in their own way. And even within one religion, there was divergences. You know, in Christianity, there was many different systems and ideas. There was the Jesuits, and there was the Dominicans. There was dozens and dozens of different Christian groups, the Carmelites, monks, nuns, all devised techniques for meditation, contemplation, visualization, so on and so on. And of course, the early desert fathers in Syria, Egypt, and the Sinai desert, and of course in all the desert countries, which we now call Iraq and Iran and all those, the early Christians went out to the desert, devised their own techniques of meditation. Same like the ancient Jewish prophets. If you read the Old Testament, the Jewish prophets just went out into the desert and try to search for God. There was no institution, God institution. You know, it wasn't that the prophet to be, one who wanted to be a prophet in the Old Testament times, went and signed up for a course of being a prophet. Okay, they didn't go to university in Jerusalem, and this is how many years it takes for us to become a prophet. Okay, there was no such thing. They just went out into the desert and did their best. By inspiration, by extremely hard work, by tremendous self-sacrifice, hardship, and everything else, and attained. Hundreds of thousands of them didn't attain, a few attained. In every religion, hundreds of thousands never attained the goal, but a few always did. You must remember that in every religion, they were true saints, and still are. A few always make it, but not the others. So the difference is that in these last 6,000 years, attempts have been made sporadically by different people who became saints later on to somehow grapple with the great invisible reality we may call the truth, or the ultimate meaning of human existence, the ultimate meaning of planetary evolution, planetary life, the ultimate meaning of the cosmos itself. Okay, so that was all right for the last few thousand years, but something new has happened today. Since 1875, we entered a new age called the Aquarian Age. Now, it so happens that this new age or Aquarian Age is a mental-oriented age. That's why the science really became to be noticed from 1875 onwards. Before that, they were the alchemists who were tinkering, trying to make gold, which they thought would make them rich or something, or the elixir of life by which they could live eternally in their physical bodies. You know, the alchemists had all this idea of making gold, making the elixir of life, the philosopher's stone and all that. They were early chemists, okay? They were tinkering with things. Some of them knew a little bit, some of them didn't know anything at all. But they were tinkering, and, you know, later on that became chemistry. But the actual real science didn't start until 1875 onward, where science became a science. That is to say that you had a theory which you tried to prove, and which ones it was proven, other people could prove it also, which is very, very important. Which means that in the Aquarian age, the average human being is mentally oriented. They don't want just theories. They don't want just theology, philosophy, metaphysics. They want a means whereby you can prove it to yourself. They want some exercise technique and meditation or whatever process, a system whereby when you do it, you attain your self-realization, your enlightenment or union with God or whatever you like to call it, God realization, knowing the Christ, knowing the Buddha, whatever you like to call it, that you become in touch with the invisible realities, a practical method. For today's generation, it's not enough just to know about it from a textbook, from a theology book. They want to know and say how to do it. So that's the question which I started off the talk. Is there a spiritual science? And the answer is yes, there is a spiritual science. It is emerging. It is emerging in our group, and it will emerge in groups like that in the future, where everything is taken very, very scientifically, and you can prove it to yourself by doing it. If you do the particular processes, you will achieve the result, like in any field of science you would. It's no longer a hit and miss affair, a trial and error, or thinking, well, maybe there is a theory, and maybe if you can prove it. Now you can actually prove it. You can do the right meditation, the right techniques, and you know that the experience of God is a reality in your life. The experience of Christ can be a reality in your life. Not as a belief system, but as a real dynamic face-to-face experience. The experience with the Holy Spirit can be real face-to-face dynamic inner experience. You don't have to just believe in it. Okay, so the question is, is this science? Well, first of all, before we explain to you the science of spiritual life as a science, we have to also understand, because we're working with science, although in the spiritual field, not in the materialistic field, that it has its own understanding, which you have to have an understanding for any science. When you want to do physics experiment, you have to have some basic understanding of physics. When you want to do some chemistry experiments, you have to have some basic understanding of chemistry. When you want to do biology experiments, you have to have some basic knowledge of biology. So similarly, in the spiritual science, you have to have certain basic knowledge, which is your foundation, your underground, so to speak, upon which you build and practice. Okay? First of all, I'll just give you some of this little foundational knowledge, which you must know before you can start practicing science, spiritual science. Well, first of all, the human species themselves, human beings, what they are and how they are. And you know, nowadays, because of the great intellectual idea and political correctness, it is believed that everybody is the same and everybody is equal, which of course is totally incorrect. If you are an actual observer of life, and an observer of human consciousness, observer of yourself and your neighbors, you know that nobody is actually equal, because everybody is different according to their level of consciousness, their level of intelligence, their level of abilities developed from the past. Anyhow, we know that when you look at society, a huge, vast proportion of it are 100% materialistic. So you know that you can't apply spiritual science to them. There are people in this country and in other countries in Europe and in many parts of the world, the so-called rich countries, where people are 100% materialistic and 100% physical, bodily oriented and 100% worldly oriented. All they're interested is simply to maintain their physical bodies and that's it. There's no thought about afterlife, there's no thought about God or about anything else. They're just completely materialistic. So you have to even start off with that some people are physical oriented and that's it. And you try to convince them that there is God, there is Christ, there is the Holy Spirit, there is a higher mind in you, there is an enlightened process inside you possible. They just shake their head and they say, no, you are a little bit cuckoo, there is no such thing. And I'm not talking about one, two, a dozen, I'm talking about hundreds of millions of people are totally materialistic. So for them, spiritual science is not possible yet. because, as I said, their consciousness is too involved with their physical bodies, with the world, and that's it. And they don't even care what happens after death. They not even think about it. Even that is too far away to worry about, okay? So you have to understand that you can't teach everybody spiritual science. The materialistic people not. Then you have another category of human beings who are emotional. You find that their basic nature is emotional. And when you go to the Middle East, most of the people, they are hysterically emotional. Uncontrolled, hysterically emotional. You say something or do something, they immediately explode in a hysterical emotional outburst. You have to acknowledge that these are facts of life. You have to observe. You watch society, watch human beings. You know, I was watching people since I was 2 years of age. By watching with an open mind and actually observing, because you can watch two ways. Your mind is totally closed and you already know the answer, or your mind is totally open and see how reality is. There are people in the world who are totally just emotional. Their solar plexus is going all the time. You say boo to them and they're ready to blow you up, quite literally. Okay, so these people also are not fit for the spiritual way of life. You must understand that people who are totally out of control emotionally also won't be able to understand the science of spirituality. Okay, so again, you have a problem. You have a whole lot of people who live by just emotional dynamism, and that's all they live by. And they feed on emotion, they stimulate each other with emotion, and that's all. You know, very intensely emotional people, and you would call them totally irrational. You can't reason with them. They just have a bundle of emotion energy, one after the other. And that's how they live life. Okay, so then you have to understand that they also are unable to approach spiritual life as a science. Because when you are a scientist of any field, you have to be able to stand back and watch your experiment. You can't be emotional about it. You can't go hysterical about everything, what you do. You have to be able to stand back and very calmly watch what results you have, how you do things, what effects it has. You know, you don't have frenzied scientists, or that they shouldn't. Most scientists are pretty cool, pretty calm, and pretty objective in what they do. So you know that people who are physical, people who are extremely emotional, they're unfit for the spiritual path because they just haven't got the qualities which they could work with. Now we come to the third category of humans who are mental. That is to say, their little brains are a computer. Now, they have a possibility, but they also have a problem because a lot of them are literally little computers. Everything you say to them, it goes through a computer and the computer files it in the system and it goes down tick, 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 tick. Yes, tick, 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 no, yes, yes, tick, 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 tick. The problem with the highly mental people is that they are too mental. Because they are too mental, they are not able to receive new ideas, new teachings, new inspirations, new ways of doing things. Why? Because their computer works along a certain selected pattern. You know, your computer is only what you program in. Those of you who are computer experts know that the computer is not a genius at all. It just follows what you programmed in. Now, with the mental type of human beings, they are like that. They are not geniuses at all. What they are learned at school, what they learned from their teachers, their authorities, whether it's religious authority or physical authority, scientific authority, political authority, they learn it, they put it in their little computer, it's stored and filed there, and when anything comes up, the computer says, oh, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, 0101, okay? Now, that in itself can be an extreme limitation. And this is why the extremely mental people can also not follow the spiritual path, because they already know everything. They think they already worked it all out. They already understood all things, and therefore nothing more is required to be known. It's another danger. And yet, amongst the mentally oriented people could be the right disciples. Now, all we need is people who establish in the mind, in the field of understanding, at the same time have an open mind and an open heart. Some people whom we can tell a new idea and they say, yeah, okay, I haven't categorized it in my little computer system here, but I'm willing to try it out. Because if you live in your mind, that's fine. But if your mind is closed, because you learn that, you know, something you learned at school and it's stuck in your mind and stuck in your little computer filing system, and then you can't move out of that, and somebody gives you a new idea and you can't move out of that file, then your computer is broken down. So you still can't possibly do the spiritual work. So you need to be able to be a person who's established in their mind, yet has an open mind, always ready for new ideas, new knowledge, new fields of experience. These people, you can teach them. You can teach them spiritual science. You can tell them, yes, you can approach life in a different way, very scientifically, and can put it into practice and you get results. But they have to be open, for starters. And more importantly, they have to be open in heart as well. Because, you know, spiritual life is not a mental life, it's a heart life. It's the way of the heart. Okay, we come to this possibility that amongst the people nowadays, we have people who are ready for discipleship, ready to understand spiritual life and put it into practice. They got the mental equipment, they got a reasonable coherence in their personality. At the same time, they open enough to new teachings, to new ideas to try out. Okay, so then what's the next step? When we have people who are open enough to try new ideas, who are not closed down with old scientific ideas or old religious political ideas or whatever they may be closed down with, or just learned some from your family. You know, people, amazingly how congested they become in their mind from all kinds of influences, from parents, from relatives, from friends, people at work, people at school, people at university, people everywhere, they're bombarded and they pick up those ideas and close down with those ideas. Right, so suppose we have people now who are mental, but at the same time able to be open enough to receive new ideas and willing to practice them, willing to try them out. And then where do we go from there? This is the beginning or the root of spiritual science. The willingness to do something, the willingness to try out. Because, you know, many people receive the truth, but they don't want to try it out. If you look in the life of the Christ, he taught literally many thousands of people, but only 12 disciples who wanted to try it out, you know, which is not very good. If you look at 3 years of teaching in the life of the Christ, very intense teaching, and he managed to muster up 12 disciples, and sometimes he talked to thousands of people in a big crowd, but those thousands of people weren't interested in actually doing it. Yes, they were interested in getting healed, you know, from leprosy or from sickness or from all kinds of things. Yes, they were very keen on that. But they were not interested to sit down and do the discipline of the spiritual life, which is required. Okay, so here we have the category two. The Buddha taught for 40 years in his lifetime, 40 long years. And he had hundreds of thousands of disciples over the 40-year period. But only 400 real disciples who actually wanted to practice the teaching. A fine category here, we have the people who are able to listen. They say, oh yeah, these are good ideas. Then what? Do they want to practice it? Because even if you have an open mind and an open heart, even if you feel that yes, life can be amazingly different, yes, life is more than what ordinary people think it's about, yes, it can be wonderful, but are you willing to practice the way? You know, like the St. Paul in the New Testament, he said that, be ye the doers of the word, not only the hearers. The word means the teaching, you know, what they call the law, the spiritual law, the teaching of the law. And some people just hear it, listen to it, but they don't want to do it. You know, St. Paul, the first thing which he was saying, be ye the doers of the word, not only the hearers. Because two kinds of people, even in those days, those who just listened but didn't do, and those who wanted to do it. So it's the doing is very, very important. Okay, so now we come to those people, the few people you notice we started with a huge pyramid. The base is very, very wide. And now we're actually coming very, very narrow in the pyramid. Now we got to the point where there are people who are intelligent. They're willing to learn new ideas. But now we come to the stage where they actually want to try it out. Okay, you see the pyramid is getting smaller and smaller. The number of people on the spiritual path are getting, you know, narrowed down now. We are at this point where people are willing to try it out. Okay, first they hear it and they say, oh yeah, let's try it out practically. Right, So they enter the school of spiritual science. It is these people who can actually come to a spiritual school, really. And these spiritual schools are there not many today yet. It will be increasingly more in the future to come. There will be actual spiritual schools, spiritual science schools, where these subjects will be taught like normal subjects. But as I said, at this stage, it is not possible to have many of these schools because of the few people who would like to actually practice the spiritual way of life as a science, as an intelligent way of doing things, with understanding. Okay, so suppose you have come to that point where, yeah, you understand, and yes, you think you should do it, then try doing it. And here is when your science becomes proper science. That is to say, practicing science. You know, putting back to the material analogy, material example, you have scientists who are theoretical scientists. You know, when you go to a university, you have two kinds of physics, the practical physics, where you actually do something with it, and the theoretical physics, where it's just all in your head and beautiful theoretical ideas. And you can churn out any theoretical ideas about anything, but nothing ever is done about it or can be done about it. That's called theoretical physics. Okay, it's just a theory, not a reality. Others, practical application, physics which can be applied. About electricity, magnetism, all kinds of forces of nature. Those are practical, okay? So now you can come in the spiritual science field where you can come to the point where you can apply what you are taught. So you are willing to learn and willing to apply what you are taught. At that moment, you become a spiritual scientist because you're ready for the practical side of the science, ready to do something about it, to do something with it. Okay, so how does normal science work? Normal science works by experimentation. Okay, you have a teacher, you have usually a professor, he will tell you that if you put these two substances together, it will explode in your hands, okay? All right, so you know that you follow instruction. But if they say if you put these two other substances together, it will change color. It makes you, test you very pretty, okay? So in science, you follow instruction. In spiritual science, you do exactly the same. You follow instruction. Because only by instruction that you can know what you have to do. And having known what to do, then you make the experiment. And then you can check back with your teacher. You can check back with the source of information. You know, was it right? Was my experience right? What did I experience? Was that correct? And the teacher will tell you yes or no, or you need to improve here or change here, or you didn't do something like that. It's a normal, proper science. In the early days, this wasn't there. This method of approach, scientific approach to spirituality, wasn't in existence. As I mentioned before, if you live back 4,000 years ago now in Israel, in the time of the prophets, 4,000 years ago, there was no spiritual science at all. You just felt the impulse to love God or do something for God, so you went out into the desert and did whatever you could dream up. You could pray, you could breathe, you could not breathe, you could do all kinds of fantastic exercise, starve yourself, anything you like. There was nobody to tell you, okay, do this, don't do this, avoid starving yourself to death. Because in those days, people liked fasting, which was quite a silly idea, and many, many things. And same in India, the people torture their physical bodies because they should attain enlightenment through it. And everywhere, in every country, people did all kinds of strange things because there was no scientific knowledge of the subject. There's no people who could instruct them in a pure scientific basis about spiritual life. So they did all kinds of strange things and had all kinds of strange results. Nowadays, we tell you don't have to starve yourself to death, and you don't have to contort yourself in all kinds of fantastic positions to attain enlightenment. We can tell you exactly what you don't do, and we can tell you exactly what you have to do. It's simple, pure science nowadays. We tell you that if you do this, it's wrong, and you just torture yourself, and it's unnecessary, but if you do the other thing, it's right, then you will get there. This is nowadays a science. As I said, not everywhere yet. In the old-fashioned system, it's still not a science. It's just a tradition. You know, in the old schools of Christianity and the Jewish and the Buddhist religion, any old religion, it's still only a tradition, not a science yet. It's just what they remember by tradition. So we're coming back that there's a possibility that you can approach this whole field as a pure science. Okay, this is coming very practically to you, because you probably are in that stage where you've been attempting to do something or are wanting to do something. And here is where a profound understanding is needed. Because, you know, a lot of people say, well, I've been meditating for 40 years, or I've been meditating for 2 years, and I've been meditating for this or this, that, or I've been following this technique or that technique, and this is the result that I got, or I didn't get, whatever the case may be. Now, here, where you need to have an overall view, first of all, you understand what you have done and why. A lot of the people who enter into the school of spiritual science are actually in a state of ignorance. They don't really still understand that it's a science. They've done maybe yoga postures, they maybe done healing techniques, they've done psychic techniques, they may have done channeling, they may have gone all kinds of psychic tripping inside themselves and everywhere else. They may have been on drugs or whatever. These are the attempts to become spiritual, but they still not knowing what really constitutes spirituality. You know, most people go through a phase of what we call seeking. You know, if they're good Christians, they become Buddhists. If they're Buddhists, they become something else. You know, we always think that by becoming something else, we attain spirituality. So it's quite common for Westerners to travel to the East and become Tibetan Buddhist or some kind of a strange thing, or monks, because they think by doing that, they're becoming spiritual. But it's not so. To become spiritual does not lie in going somewhere else at all. It's going inside yourself. That's where the spiritual lies. So you have to have the right teacher and the right teaching. So it's not a matter of changing to another religion, or not even a changing to another aspect of your own religion. It's really an inward turning of your attention to the soul within you, to the kingdom of God within you. It's already there. So it's not a matter of traveling to Tibet and become a Buddhist monk and then you find, well, I attain enlightenment by that method. Because that's still very unscientific. In other words, people do that, they haven't discovered that spirituality is a science. So they try to go from one teacher to the next, one guru to the next, one school of thought to the next, one religion to the next, one group to the next, one sect to the next. Because by thinking if they keep changing all the time, they're learning and they're attaining enlightenment, but they're not. They just simply manage to confuse themselves. Okay, so the real spiritual science is within us, lies within us. Which means that somehow you have to have the right teacher or the right teaching which points the way that you are the way. The Christ light is within you. You know, the light of the soul is shining already within you. The light of the deity is already illumining you. And then you say, how? You know, if the teacher says, well, look, the light of God shines within you, then you say, how? Because remember, we're talking to scientific students, students of science. They say, okay, if that's the theory, the light of God is within me, how? Tell me how. And how do I discover it? This is good questioning. You are a scientific student, a student of spiritual life. Okay, here where you have to have a little bit more esoteric understanding of what human nature is, what the world really is, and what God really is. Because, you know, if you have just simple knowledge, you do not know these things. You know, you believe that God is a father in heaven and sitting on a throne. And the Christ is some beautiful figure sitting next to him on the throne. And the Holy Spirit is a nice little gentle dove floating above them too. And heaven is a nice place where the angels play harps. All right? Well, if you have that idea, you are not a scientist yet. Because these are religious symbols from theology. They are symbols, not realities. Just religious symbols. And the Hindu religion has their own symbols, as you know. The Buddhists have their own symbols. The Tibetans have their symbols. The old Jews had their own symbols, like the seven-branch candlestick and the six-pointed star, etc. All the religions have symbols, but they are not the reality. They have nothing to do with realities. In real science, you don't use symbols. You use real stuff. So we come to the point where you are really interested and you really want to try it out. First of all, you have to base your knowledge on a very simple truth. A very simple truth that you are actually more than what you appear to be. That is to say that a human being is not just a physical body. Because as in the materialistic world, you are just a physical body. This is why they're tinkering with the brain all the time. They say, oh, we discovered such and such a thing about the mind. Mind? Question mark. And you read the article, yes, they were looking at these brain cells or this group of brain cells. The brain is not the mind. There's no connection with the mind. The brain is not your mind. That's just your physical body. Your emotional nature is enveloping you like an invisible energy field. Your mind is an energy field which is enveloping that also. And beyond that, you have something else, the living soul. Now again, when you are in the normal belief system, normal theology, you think that the soul is a little balloon, you know, above you, so that when you die, somehow you float away in this little balloon to heaven or something like that. It's a very primitive image of a soul. People believe that it's there, but you don't know what it is like, where it is, or how it is. But you don't have a soul, you are a soul. You are the soul. In fact, more than that, you are spirit, pure spirit. And the Spirit of God is inside you. Okay, so you have to base your scientific experiment with the fact that you are not just a physical body. You have emotional fields of energies around you. You have mental fields of energies around you. And above that, you are a living soul, a pure, immaterial, eternal, immortal soul. And beyond that, within that soul itself, there's the point, the apex of divinity, the Godhead himself, the Logos, the creative word, the wonder of all wonders. It's within you already at the apex of your soul. The highest region of the soul is connected to God directly. You have to know as a basic foundational work from which you start. Because if you don't know that, of course you have no sense of direction, orientation. And then you dabble in magic, you dabble in shamanism, you dabble in channeling, you dabble in all kinds of new age stuff, crystal waving, anything which takes you fancy because you don't understand what you're supposed to be doing. That's why a lot of the new agers do all kinds of strange things because they don't really understand the directions they should be moving. There's nobody explaining them properly. Because when you do just psychic stuff or shamanistic stuff, this is not spiritual science. You know, you can be in touch with the invisible world, the next world, the world of the dead, the world of the departed. But that is not spiritual science. You can be channeling so-called entities, but that's not spiritual science. It's nothing to do with spiritual science. It's just to do with the next layer of the universe around us. Because you have within here an invisible layer where the spirits go who died, so-called died. And then within that another layer, what we call the heavenly dimensions. Within that another layer, within that another layer, and so on. Seven great layers within space. So you have to know this, because if you don't know, then your direction will be totally wrong again. You think that by doing some psychic stuff, you're making the spiritual journey, and you haven't started yet. So that's why you need to have a good teacher who can tell you right on day one, no, this only leads you to 100% of the road. This will lead you a little bit further, but if you do that, this leads you all the way. To get to know yourself as a living soul, you have to do practices which lead you to the living soul. If you want to unite yourself with God, literally as the mystics did, and they talk about they were one with God, you have to have a right practice which enables you to do that. Because if you're merely involved in the astral world, you will never get there. But the practice is 1,000% important. And the New Agers don't know. They say all practices are the same. Everything leads to the same. Well, don't. You know, if you say that all roads lead to where? Where do all roads lead? They all go in different direction. You know, there's a road you can go to Moscow, there's a road you can go to Berlin, and there's a road you can go to Amsterdam, and there's a road you can go to Rome. But they not all go in the same direction whatsoever. Therefore, all the practices people do are not of the same value. And because the New Ages are very ignorant of spiritual science, they think it's all the same value. Okay, we can do a bit of a channeling, we can play with a little bit with a pendulum, we can do a bit of a healing, and it's all the same, we all get there. Well, you don't. Not by any means at all. Just think, the trains go in different directions, they not all end up in the same destination at all. So your practice is very, very important. To attain pure spiritual consciousness, you must have pure spiritual practices. You know, if you want to get to the kingdom of God within, you have to have the right practice that leads to the kingdom of God within, not to the psychic dimensions, not to the so-called spirits, or to some other limbo state or whatever state they go to. Because if you do that, that's where you end up in. So it's very, very important that, you know, not be woolly in your thinking, not be just hazy about your thinking and just do whatever somebody comes and tells you, because they're not going to lead you to the right goal. So the right practice is that which leads you to revelation of your own soul, the divinity within you. And there's not many of those practices. As I said, by swinging a pendulum, you won't get there. By channeling, you won't get there. By doing psychic work, you won't get there. Psychic healing won't make you go there. Many, many things you do won't get you there. But of course, put it this way, if you don't want to go there, just want to do other things, well, it's fine. Nature, everything is fine if that's what you want to do. But we're talking about spiritual science here, the science of the soul, the science of divinity within you, the science of God. For that, you must have a way, first of all, the understanding, the foundation understanding, and the right practice, and then you do it. Now, suppose you have understood this, and suppose you decided, yes, I'm going to search out the God within me, I become one with the universal Christ presence, I'm going to find my real soul, what I really am in creation, that beautiful, immortal, eternal being that I am. Well, then you must start practicing in the right way. Suppose you got all this. Suppose you got the right knowledge. Suppose you got the right technique and start practicing. Well, it doesn't mean that you immediately get there. This is where we're talking about a little bit more advanced discipleship. Say the beginning discipleship is that you get yourself together, get this knowledge together, start practicing and so on. You could say this is kind of small discipleship, a little disciple, okay? When you become a little bit more advanced disciple, you realize that the spiritual path is not as easy as you thought it would be. Because, you know, you found the right teacher, you found the right teaching, and you get enthusiastic. You do your meditation, you do your chanting, you do your breathing, you do your exercises, whatever you do. And you say, okay, I give myself 10 minutes and I'm there in the kingdom of heaven, right? And God will speak to me in great glories and unveil the mysteries of creation. Well, that's very fine in theory. But in fact, it's nothing as easy as that at all. So even when you got the right teaching, the right teacher, the right practice, it doesn't mean that you're going to attain the great vision goal of life in 5 minutes. Not in 5 minutes, not in 5 days, not in 5 years. Shall I go longer? Because it depends on many, many factors. If uniting yourself with God would be easy, if finding your soul was easy, well, 6.5 billion people would have already done so. Do you realize that there are 6.5 billion people on this planet currently in physical bodies? Another 3.5 billion people on the inner worlds who are out of physical bodies, okay, in the astral dimension and in the subtle intermediary worlds and the heaven worlds and so on. We've got another 3.5 billion people there with no bodies, no physical bodies. They live in other conditions, okay? Now, do you think that if the path would be easy, then all these billions of people wouldn't be living in their physical bodies anymore anyhow? They would be all floating away in nirvana or the kingdom of God or the bright light of eternity, the endless light, you know, the eternal and infinite being, the mind of God. They would be all dwelling as archangels in the mind of God. But the fact that they are here shows that they are not in that condition yet, which means that even if your mind is clear about the path, what you have to do next? Work. You cannot escape work. You cannot escape discipline. Well, why do you think that the Buddha, after teaching 40 years, he had only really 400 disciples? And why do you think that the Christ, teaching for 3 years, had 12 disciples? And why do you think that all the other sages who taught many years had only a few disciples? Because not many people wanted to do the work. Because they told them, do this and do that. But you see, they weren't interested in the discipline. They were interested in the teaching. Oh, yes, this is fine. Nirvana is fine. Oh, nirvana sounds good. Kingdom of God sounds good. Oh, this is fine, you know. But when the teacher tells, well, you have to, you know, put a little bit of effort into it. Well, you know, we're too busy. We got family to look after. We got a business to run. You know, we got 10 children to send to school and everything else. You know the story. When you tell people that you have to do practical, say, oh, no, no, we are too busy. Or we will do that later, you know, just the day before we die, you know. Give us a chance. You know, when we are 94, just before the last best, we'll start doing it. Well, actually, it's too late. And here's another problem. The problem is that even if you understood the teaching, even if you do the right practice, you have to have another further revolution in your consciousness. And that is the actual understanding of the way itself in this present age. Because what? 2,000 years ago, you went out into the desert. Suppose you were lucky to find a teacher, which, as I said, was not very easy in those days. Suppose you found a teacher. He will tell you, go out in the desert and pray for 40 years. So he had nothing else to do, just pray for 40 years. And within that 40 years, you would have found God. Why? Because there was nothing else in your life to hinder it. You just dedicated your life totally to the project of praying for 40 years, and you would have glimpses of your soul and glimpses of God and the omni-revelation of the cosmos. You would have it, because you had nothing else to do but that one point. Okay, that was 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago. Today, it's not the same. You can't just say, well, here is a meditation technique, practice it for 20 years in your solitude in Munster in the mountain top. Okay, and withdraw yourself in a cave in the mountaintop in Munster, and a drafty cave, and then the village ladies will bring you chapatis and fish every Friday. That which was in the olden days how it was. They thought you were a saint if you withdrew from the world. It doesn't matter whether you're a Christian or Jew or Muslim or Hindu or Buddhist or Tibetan, whatever, in those days, or the, you know, the Chinese Taoist or the Japanese Zen. They withdrew from the world, and people admired them for withdrawing from the world, and they gave them food and clothes and shelter, something like that. And they spent all their time and energies doing their meditation, breathing techniques, exercises, prayers, whatever they did. And that was fine. But not today. I'm sure that the Munster City Council wouldn't like you to sit naked in the middle of the road and with a begging bowl and saying your prayers. You know, they would think that you are odd. Now, here is another deeper understanding you must have, that the spiritual way is real. There is a spiritual science, and we teach it in our group, and the increasingly more groups will come about over the next few decades which are really understood the science of it. But you also have to know that this science has got now another qualification, that it has to merge with you living today. It's not enough to think that you can do the same thing as we did 3,000 years ago in India or in Israel or in the Arab countries or anywhere in the world or in China or Tibet. We are no longer in that same category of society. Therefore, the knowledge is adapted to today. And this is why you need a proper spiritual school again, a spiritual science, because in the proper school you understand that you must adapt your teaching to the society we're living in today. Because why? Because that's the fact we're living today. We not lived 2,000 years ago. We are living in the 21st century. So the teaching must be applicable to the 21st century, which means that your way has to be the way of the Aquarian age. All right, the last Paschal age, 2,000 years ago, which was inaugurated by Jesus the Christ, it was actually Christ who started off the 2,000 period. It's 2,160 years for one great cosmic cycle. So the Christ has inaugurated or started off the Paschal age. Now, during that 2,160 years of the past, the vibration which impinged on human consciousness all over the world, east, west, north, south, everywhere, was withdrawal from the world. So people who are interested in spirituality, they made an attempt to withdraw from the world. You know, they all went into the desert. They all went into the mountains. They all went into the forest to meditate. There was thousands of Christians in the early days. The first 400 years of Christianity was all what they called the desert fathers. They spent all their time meditating in the desert. They went to Egypt, they went to Syria, they went to Iraq, they went to the so-called Palestine lands, everywhere in the desert, and they spent their time in contemplation. People did that in India, they did it in China, in Tibet, all over the world. The religious people who wanted to experience the reality, they withdrew from the world. And they spend their time in solitude or in monasteries or ashrams. You may call them ashrams or monasteries or sanctuaries or temples or whatever you like to call it. The Christians built many kinds of monasteries, and some of them are still standing. and nunneries where Christian women become nuns, but they were still withdrawn from the world. They just withdrew into a monastery or a nunnery, away from the world. Okay, but that was for the last 2,160 years. But since 1875, this is no longer the way. And that's why in all these religions, very few people want to become monks and nuns these days. You don't have millions of people wanting to become a monk or a nun. Why? Because it is the wrong vibration for this age. This age is the age of science, which means that you live in the world and you try to understand the world around you, whether it is the material world or whether it's the spiritual world. You know, as the material world is around you, so is the spiritual world around you, invisible. Invisible to your eyes, but it's still around you. Heaven is all around us, you know. It's just that you can't see it with your physical eyes, but the eyes of the soul see it all the time. So this is an age of science, which means that you don't quit the world, you try to understand it. Before that time, before the last 2,160 years of the Paisan dispensation, people couldn't care much about the world. That's why there was not scientific progress, you know. They invented the wheel long time ago, but they didn't really make this tremendous progress. The real progress of science came about from 1875, when the Aquarian Age hit. Then science began to really take off, and as you know, it's progressing at a tremendously rapid rate today. But so is spiritual science. The seed of spiritual science was cast in 1875, and it's increasing in the same way as material science. The understanding of how spiritual laws are becoming more apparent in the human mind. And as I said, like in our group, we work with it very scientifically, and also groups which are coming in the future, they will look upon it as a form of science, understanding how the laws of spirit are. Okay? Nowadays, you have to amalgamate your knowledge in your practical day-to-day living. You know, you may have family, you will have a job, you have worldly responsibilities, so you don't quit them, you actually apply them. You apply your knowledge in the situation you are in. You apply it in relationship. You apply it at work. You apply it with family. You apply it with friends or no friends. You apply it just with anywhere where you are, because it is a science of living. Living today. In the 21st century, and of course in the last century, the 20th century. Okay, which means that the journey will appear to be longer now. There's a good reason I'm telling you this, because, you know, if you were, say, doing these practices 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, you spent, say, 20 hours in meditation every day, completely withdrawn, you have no job to worry about, no family to look after, no responsibilities whatsoever, you could spend a lot of time on yourself doing your own thing. Of course you get results. You know, if you really have no responsibility towards the world of any shape, and you're just thinking about yourself all the time and meditating and doing stuff for yourself only all the time, of course the results will come quicker. But that cycle of time has finished. Now we have to be responsible to everybody else around us. The world is now our family, which means that you can't really sit around and do your own thing for 20 hours every day. You have to be actually moving in society. You actually have to be moving with people, whether it's your friends or your work or your relatives or whoever, just people around you in your life. You have to commingle with them, communicate with them. The law demands it now, the spiritual law, which means that apparently your progress is slow, because obviously you won't be able to meditate 8 hours a day. Some of you are lucky to do 8 minutes a day, right? You know, because you say, well, we're too busy, we have to look after the kids, we have to look after the job, we have to rush here and we rush there and we do all the other things. Okay, so now then comes a deeper layer of understanding of spiritual science. And the deeper layer, in a more advanced layer of spiritual science, you understand that you must integrate your normal day-to-day condition with your spiritual life. And that also is not very easy. It takes another layer of understanding. First, the understanding of spiritual science itself. Next, how to integrate it. And this is where many people fail again. So we are coming to the pyramid Very closer, closer like that. Now, we have people already practicing the spiritual science, but they cannot integrate it in their daily life. So you can see the possibility of succeeding is getting very, very slim. So you have to come to an understanding that you have to integrate your knowledge with your day-to-day living, and the people you live with are not your enemy, not the ones who try to stop you from spiritual progression. Because another thing is that people, you know, the beginners on the spiritual way of life, they always think, well, because I have a family, they're stopping my spiritual progress, okay? Or I have a job, therefore it stops my spiritual progress. Or I had a fight with my grandmother, it stops my spiritual progress. Now we come to the middle range of spiritual science, where you come across the problems of life, the situations of life, real life, not theology, not theory, real life, practical day-to-day life. You come across the problems of living itself. You come across the problems of the country you live in, the place, the time, the weather, and of course the government, which are the worst, right? Weather and the government. Okay, so you come across these problems. But then when you are in this level of spiritual science, you have to understand that those problems are real and you must not deny them. Because here's another interesting thing. There are certain schools in the West. There's two schools. I won't tell you which ones. One started in the 19th century and one started a short time ago, about 20 years ago or so, where they don't believe that there is suffering. They don't believe that there is pain. They don't believe that there is misery. And they don't believe that there is anything wrong in the world whatsoever. In other words, they're denying the reality of the world. They have a certain spiritual understanding, yes, but they are still at this part of the pyramid. They come that far, they live a spiritual life, a spiritual science, but then they're in denial of the worldly reality. Well, that's just as bad. It's silly to deny the world, because the world exists. You know, you can't say, well, my pain in the knee doesn't exist, because in the mind of God it doesn't exist. It's true, in the mind of God your pain doesn't exist, but that's nothing to do with you. You know, you had a car accident, and according to these schools of thought, there's two of them, which I won't mention politically correctly, they say, well, you know, you didn't have the car accident because there's no such thing as a car accident, because in the mind of God or in the spirit, there's no such thing. Well, of course, there's nothing in the spirit, but you happen to be in the car and you had the accident. So to actually deny the facts of life is also a great error. So at that stage of your spiritual science, you have to come to another realization in yourself that whatever happens to you, you must not deny it, because it is part of your journey. It's part of your trip towards your completion, towards your enlightenment, towards your liberation, towards union with the divine within you. They're not against you, it's part of it. This is something which, as I said, many of these people who reach that level of spiritual science, they go into a complete denial of being anything imperfect with the world. They think, oh, no, you know, it's just an illusion in your mind. It's not an illusion at all. If you run into a tree and you have a big, big thing in your head because you ran into the tree, it's not an illusion. Anybody can touch it and say, ow. To call that an illusion is really silly. It's not an illusion. It's very real. So one thing, when you reach that level of spiritual science, you have to understand that you must not deny what is the obvious. It's real. And what is more, once you didn't deny it, it can actually help you for your next part of the journey. It's only when you deny it that it hinders you from progress, not when you actually accept it. Suppose you were driving crazily, or you were half asleep, or you were drunk and you ran into a tree. Okay, now in this school of thought, they deny the accident. It doesn't exist. In the universal mind of God, it doesn't exist. And you say, well, okay, I didn't have this accident really. And then next time you do exactly the same. You get drunk or you get sleepy and you have another accident. How many times you have to do this before you say, I must be stupid in doing this. I must be stupid in doing this. So finally you have to acknowledge that it's real. It's because you did something that these things have happened. Okay, so you come to this level of the spiritual science when you realize that everything which happens to you is real because it was caused by a past event. You may have done something in the past which produced an event now, or your family done something in the past, or your country did something in the past, or your religion did something in your past. You know, you look at the Middle East, what's going on there. It's not because what happened today. What happened many thousands of years ago, all the problems of the Middle East is about 6,000 years old already. Didn't start yesterday. It didn't start with the Americans. This is incredibly short-sighted. The problem of the Middle East is 6,000 years old problem. The problem of Africa is at least 8,000 years old. All the tribal wars and slaughters in Africa goes for many, many generations. It's just that people don't look backward. They just look at the news today and they say, ooh, all these things are happening today. As if somehow in the whole eternal continuum, suddenly, without any previous warning, those things happened. Well, things are not like that. It's always have a long, long history. You have a long history behind you. You know, thing which happens to you today, it didn't happen just because you sneezed. You have a long history behind you. And the sooner you kind of look back on a long term and look back at your religion in a long term and religions and politics and countries and nations and history itself on a long term, you realize that there's always a cause. Whatever is today is caused by the whole series of chains of events in the past. And then you begin to understand, and that understanding will make you liberate yourself from the conditioning of your society and religion. Because people are conditioned by their religion, they act according to that conditioning. Because they don't realize that they have been conditioned. They think they're doing the right thing. They're fighting for God. They're fighting for this political party. They're fighting for this science. Or they're fighting for this music department. Or they're fighting for one thing or another. And they think that it's happening right now. And when you look back, oh no, the causes stretch back long, long back into the past. And then once you see that, you free yourself from it. And you can really act intelligently and spontaneously in that situation, not before. All the people in the Middle East, they're acting because of the past. They cannot think today whatsoever. They're just simply reacting to long events in the past. And they keep doing it until they become a little bit more intelligent. But the same in any field, in every part of the globe. People reacting according to past conditioning. Okay, now, once you've seen that yourself, that everything that happens to you have caused it somewhere along the line, or your family caused it, or your religion caused it, or your country has caused it, or something have caused it, you go back to the cause of it, then that moment you are free. And that moment you can live again your normal spiritual way of life. So there comes a stage in the pyramid when you're approaching nearly to the top where you are really free, where you can really act in the moment spontaneously without any previous conditioning, without previous religious conditioning, political conditioning, scientific conditioning, because there is also scientific conditioning, educational conditioning, political conditioning, and even conditioning of diet. You know, people are conditioned by all kinds of strange things. Even diet can condition people, believe it or not. So it's only when you reach that part of the pyramid, just on the top little triangle, where you are a free entity in space and time, able to do the right thing in the moment, here and now. You are free from all past conditioning. You are tuned into the spirituality within you, understand the science of the law of life, and you are working at it. It's only just there where you are really the real proper spiritual scientist, where you can have a foundation where you can really build your spiritual science and attain enlightenment in this lifetime, or you may say union with God in this lifetime, or whatever you like to call it, cosmic consciousness in the lifetime, or truth, or whatever, the law. Because you are now in that state where your understanding is sharp and clear, your practice is sharp and clear, and you are free from hindering conditionings. And this is another thing which a lot of people, you know, when they first start on the journey, they think, okay, we did it. We did already meditation 5 times and we expect some result. But what they didn't know is that they are still full of conditioning. And those very conditionings are hindering the result. They may have a religious conditioning, a scientific conditioning. Scientific conditioning is very bad because, you know, science teaches you that there is no such thing as invisible worlds. There's no such thing as God. There's no such thing as spirit. There's no such thing as a life force in the cosmos. There's no such thing as a soul. No such thing as angels. So if you are conditioned by that, you know, because you believe what you were taught at school and university, that can be also the hindrance. It stops you from actually moving forward in your spiritual way because you say, I can't do this because there is really no God. So what's the point doing this? You know, if you are conditioned, your journey is finished right away. So you have to be unconditioned from everything of the past. And in that spontaneous unconditioning, the way emerges inside yourself. And then it goes beyond external processes, or if you like, it goes beyond things which we do. It becomes things which we become. It becomes more like an internal kind of an adjustment within yourself, whereby you become more and more tuned into reality, more and tuned into your own soul, more tuned into the guidance of the Holy Spirit, more tuned into guidance of the Word, the Logos, if you like, the creative principle, and more tuned in with the cosmos itself. And this is really beyond words or beyond, shall we say, structure. You come to the tiny little top part of the pyramid where you are in what we call the ever-ongoing process of enlightenment, ever-ongoing revelation inside you, or the ever-ongoing possibility of evolution or unfoldment. Before that, you were struggling. Now the way is clear. And what is more, you discover that the way is an infinite way. It's not something that stops. You know, union with God is not something that you had a bit of a bright flash and then that was it. You realize that the spiritual way of life is an ever-ongoing way of life. Even when you reach your highest possible state inside you, there is infinite progress because in the infinite mind of God, there's infinite possibility. There's no such thing in the mind of God where that's it and there's no more. God is omniscient, omnipotent and omnipresent. Omniscient, which means knows every possible knowing in the cosmos. Omnipresent means it's everywhere that you can imagine in space, trillions and trillions of light years away, it's still there. And omnipotent means can do everything, which means that we as reflected human beings, we are literally made in image and likeness of the deity, we have all these possibilities to become. We can become omniscient, omnipotent and omnipresent. And that doesn't happen, boom, instantaneously like that at all. As you evolve, as you move inside, you become more and more sense, and more sense, and more sense, but never reach the complete omniscience, or the complete omnipresence, or the complete omnipotence. Because if you did, what you were going to do for the rest of eternity? This is one wrong thing about the heaven idea, because okay, maybe the angels play the guitar, or the harp, but how long could you do that without getting bored? Now, can you imagine you are an angel with a reasonably average mind? And then God told you to play the guitar or the harpsichord or the harp. So you say, oh, that's very nice. And you do it for 1 or 2 years. And after a while, you scratch your head, God, can we do something else? Because, you know, this is really, I mean, I tried all the possible notes and all the possible combination of notes. And now I just have to repeat myself. And that's pretty boring. Okay, so you find that in real life, heaven is not fixed at all. Because as I said, in theology, heaven is fixed. The Father sits here, the Son sits here, and the Holy Spirit just keeps going round and round like that. And the angels just keep playing the harp. Well, nobody would want to stay in that heaven. I mean, if that's what heaven is, well, you better not go to that place. It's better than here. At least you have variety here, okay? So, actually, what real life is, what really the spiritual reality is, that it's ever expanding. It's a vision of reality because you're dealing with an infinite mind. An infinite mind just means precisely that, infiniteness of mind, infiniteness of intelligence, infiniteness of creativity. God cannot be described by any limitation whatsoever. It's an infinite way, an infinite light, an infinite consciousness, an infinite being. Infinite means no end. And so when you begin to tune into yourself to the upper region of the pyramid, you begin to sense this infiniteness. And you realize, wow, you know, in this infinite condition, there's no limit to what we can become. There's no limit what future can hold for us. Nirvana has no limit. The kingdom of God has no limit. The mind of God has no limit. So as you start tuning in, you begin to sense that infinite possibility inside you. and you begin to work. Now you are the spiritual scientist. You are no longer a pupil of spiritual science. You're no longer just a beginner of spiritual science. You are a master of spiritual science. You actually know the way, and you are infinitely unfolding and moving in ever larger, larger realities within yourself. Okay, we just stop here for now. Just go and calm yourself down for a few minutes of silence.